Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, nuclear war. Best-selling author and Pulitzer finalist Annie Jacobson paints a frightening picture of how real the threat is and how close we've come to the unthinkable. Also this morning, with diminishing cognitive ability being a topic on everyone's mind lately, the Better Brain Solution outlines a lifestyle plan to sharpen mental function and prevent memory loss. And in our Throwback Thursday segment this morning, reflections on a legendary musical career with Richard Sturban, who has been the most distinctive voice of the Oak Ridge Boys for half a century. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, July 11th, 2024. So this is the story. If you are looking for a way to beat the heat, you can stop by any 7-Eleven or Speedway location today for a free Slurpee. Now, it's just the small size, but it's free. National Slurpee Day, held every year on the 11th of July, and there is no purchase necessary. As they say, you can actually get more than just one free Slurpee, too. If you scan your Speedy Rewards membership information, you get a coupon for another free small Slurpee sometime between tomorrow and the end of the month. So a free Slurpee today and another one sometime before the end of July. But wait, there's even more. You can also get a chance to win free Slurpees for an entire year by using your Speedy Rewards app or by purchasing certain products. So I'm here to share all of that important news this morning. Want to make sure that you are aware of the most important news of the day, and that has to be the lead story. I mean, it has to be, right? It could not be anything else. Let's see, what else going on among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of corporate promotions, free Slurpees is one thing, but how about how about creating an entire living community, senior living community around your brand? A Taco Bell is going to open retirement communities in L.A. and San Diego. Taco Bell opening retirement communities in Southern California for people who have not saved enough money to actually stop working. They call them the Cantinas, keeping with the south of the border theme, and they will offer, it says here, senior-inspired recreation and cross-generational activities like afternoon aerobics, pickleball matches, and morning tea times. The catch, you need to be a Taco Bell Rewards member. let's see. Weekend membership costs $150, and a day pass will set you back $50. Memberships will be available for purchase first come, first serve, beginning July 16th, starting at 9 a.m. in the Taco Bell app. Retirement communities themed around Taco Bell. All right. that seems a little over the top to me. Maybe it's just me, but that seems a little over the top. And speaking of observances, I did see this. July is National Pickle Month. I don't know if you knew that or not. It is Pickle Month. And Clausen Pickles has teamed with a bakery in New York City to come out with a pickle-flavored green mini cupcake. It is pickle-flavored and topped with pickle buttercream icing. There are few things that sound less appetizing to me than pickle buttercream icing on top of a pickle-flavored cupcake. The bakery, baked by Melissa, describes the cupcake as delightful and says it is a great sweet, salty, sour pickle treat. Does seem like pickles are having a moment this summer. I don't know what it is. I saw something on TV the other day about a pickle submarine sandwich. pickle hoagie. Basically, it is a regular sub sandwich hoagie, however you want to term it, whatever term you use, but it is sandwiched between two pickles. You know, those big long pickles, they slice it lengthwise, and then that becomes the bun. The pickle is the bun. Giant pickle is the bun. I don't know. Yeah, that's a Long Island deli that came up with that idea. Sandwiches layered between two pickle slices instead of bread. So, I don't know. It's National Pickle Month. Check that out if you are so inclined. I am not, but a couple of other items. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. So yesterday we were talking about the European Soccer Championship tournament that is going on this month, and also happening in this country, it's what's called the Copa America. It is the America's Cup of teams from North, Central, and South America that have come together. The U.S. got knocked out in the group stage of this tournament. And last night, let me see, Canada made it to the semifinals. They lost to Argentina. And last night, Colombia knocked off Uruguay to reach the final as well in the other semifinal match. But what was crazy about this is apparently after, and I did not see this, but I read about it this morning on the Newswire, after the match, after Uruguay lost, some of the players went into the stands to fight with Colombian fans who were giving them a hard time. Actually jumped into the stands and started fighting with the, apparently there was a confrontation on the pitch between the players, and then it spilled over into the stands, and some of the Uruguayan players jumped into the stands to join in the melee. And it was just a crazy scene. And that I was thinking about this when I saw this next story on the Newswire about a guy in New Hampshire who is celebrating after winning the International Axe Throwing Championship in Toronto. Another big sporting event that I'm sure everybody has been following very closely. Austin Agosti beat over 250 other competitors from around the world to take his first title in the International Axe Throwing Championship. Apparently, the past couple of years, he has come up just short, finishing second in 2022 and third in 2023. He finally won it. The victory comes only 5 years after he chucked his first axe, having only started in the sport in 2019. But I was thinking to myself, this would be, thank goodness the other competitors in this particular event don't behave the way the Uruguayan soccer players behave. Because I'm thinking, if you have axe throwers jumping into the stands to fight with the crowd, that could get really ugly. You know what I mean? That could get... I'm thinking if you are part of the International Axe Throwing Championships, then you really have to have a very calm demeanor if you lose. You can't get overly emotional if you, because that could be very bad. They but that's pretty cool, actually. So congratulations to Austin Agosti from New Hampshire, the International Axe Throwing Champion for 2024. USA! 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 And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, there have been an awful lot of stories this summer of shark attacks. People in the ocean, even in relatively shallow water, being attacked by sharks this year. It is the summer of the shark attack. But did you know that shark attacks, not the most dangerous thing that can happen to you on the beach? Far from it, in fact. Because you would think the easiest way to avoid a shark attack is you just don't go into the water. But that may not be safe either. Coastal science researcher Stephen Leatherman has a warning for the millions of Americans headed for a day of fun in the sun this summer. Be careful on the beach. Don't dig too deep in the sand. A deep hole in the sand can collapse on a person and be extremely difficult to escape from. Research suggests that more people die from being suffocated by sand than from shark attacks. Suffocated by sand. And who among us has not done this, buried ourselves or someone else in the sand? And that can be extremely, extremely dangerous because sand is unstable and can be surprisingly heavy, especially when it's wet. Rescuers trying to help a buried victim may find that sand refills the hole over and over again. And so for your safety, Mr. Leatherman suggests never digging a hole deeper than the knee height of the shortest person in your group. And if someone does get buried, focus on exposing their mouth and removing sand from their chest until you can fully dig them out. So just be careful. Man, it's ruining all the fun. Who among us hasn't done that? At one point buried somebody in the sand, maybe even up to their neck, but it is not a safe thing to do. So there you go. Just want to keep you safe on the beach this year. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today with a high in the low 80s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-60s. Your full forecast is on the way. Findlay City Schools Board of Education approved an income tax levy for the fall ballot. On November 5th, voters in the school district will decide whether to approve a 1% income tax levy. The school district points out that it has not received any new operating funds for almost 20 years, and the district will see a reduction in state funding next school year.
We believe that this is the best mechanism to proceed forward with getting new operating revenue into the district, because in its earned income tax, it will grow with inflation, it will grow, it won't be held flat like property tax.
Findlay City Schools says it'll begin running a deficit this year and expects its cash balance to run negative in fiscal year 2026 if a levy isn't passed. Get more in this story on our website. There's a push at the Ohio State House to cut down on the theft of catalytic converters.
The bill would require scrap metal dealers and anyone else who buys these items to comply with more record keeping and reporting. It would also ban salvage dealers from buying or accepting catalytic converters and enhances the penalties for stealing them.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The latest installment of the Our Stories video series by Blanchard Valley Health System features professional golfer Julie Cole, who has a heart for giving back to her community. As a proud Findlay native, Julie created a charity golf classic for Bridge Hospice 35 years ago that has raised more than $3.2 million for its beneficiaries.
I thank the country club and all the staff there and the Blanchard Valley Health System volunteers. They make that a beautiful event, and I think it stands out, in addition to the quality of pros we bring in.
And each year, Julie returns to her hometown of Findlay, dedicating her time and passion to the special event. Get more in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Now our cover story this morning. It has been nearly 80 years since we unleashed the first nuclear weapon on the world. And since then, we have actually been closer to all-out nuclear war more times than most Americans would think. And the amount of time that the president would have to formulate a response is much less than you might think. New York Times bestselling author and Pulitzer finalist Annie Jacobson examines the ticking clock scenario of what would unfold in the event of a nuclear attack against the United States in her new book, Nuclear War. And Annie, you're not pulling any punches here. This is pretty sobering stuff. You say this book reveals what the government and military do not want the public to understand about the current state of nuclear weapons. What is it that they don't want us to know?
Well, I take the book in seconds and minutes. It's a ticking time clock scenario through nuclear launch to nuclear winter. And the reason I did this is I wanted to demonstrate in appalling detail just how horrific nuclear war would be. And as you mentioned in your opening, this is not, you know, Annie Jacobson's imagination.
Yeah.
These are facts sourced from my interviews with presidential advisors, cabinet member officials, people like former secretaries of defense, former commander of nuclear sub-forces, former STRATCOM commander, former FEMA director. This is really bad news all around unless the public becomes aware of the situation at hand, how perilous the situation is, and people can back down off this brink of nuclear rhetoric and nuclear saber rattling.
You mentioned you spoke to a lot of individuals and experts, both inside and outside of the military, to get the truth of all of this. What made them talk to you?
You know, a lot of my interviews were done during COVID, and it was a very unique time because it was coming on the heels of former President Donald Trump's rather unpresidential rhetoric about nuclear war with North Korea. Mm-hmm. The threats, the fire and fury, the button, all of that is not something we had ever seen from a U.S. president. And so it set the stage, I believe, for a lot of these officials to become really nervous about the fact that this was going on. And because it was COVID, I believe that people found themselves with a little more time than usual. And so I was able to do multiple interviews with numerous people that are right there sitting, and they were all retired at that point, but sitting in the command and control chain of command, all warning me about how dangerous this was. Here we are a couple years later, and, you know, I don't think any of my sources could have imagined how much worse the situation has become.
One of the things that I thought was interesting in the book is you talk about there's actually much less time involved than maybe what most people think. The amount of time that it would take for a nuclear attack from launch to impact in the United States, the amount of time that the president would actually have to respond, and the fact that again, we've been close maybe more times than people actually realize. That threat is more real than maybe what we are comfortably thinking it is.
You know, you're touching upon the most important central issue here, which is timing, speed, urgency.
Yeah.
How once nuclear war begins, it cannot be undone. And as an investigative journalist, when you're reporting a book, there's always kind of a moment with one source that stands out where you go, it's very much of an aha moment where you realize, oh my God, that is the centerpiece. That's the beating heart of all of it.
Yeah.
And I will relay to you what that was, which was said to me by former STRATCOM commander, General Robert Keeler. Now, the STRATCOM commander is in charge of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. He's the steward of the arsenal. So in the event of the need of a nuclear counterattack, the STRATCOM commander speaks directly with the president. So this is rehearsed. And what General Keeler said to me when we were discussing what it would be like, that is a full-scale nuclear exchange between Russia and the United States, Keeler said to me, Annie, the world could end in the next couple of hours. That is at the center of this tale.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, the idea that we have defenses against this is really a myth.
Absolutely. It is pure fantasy, and it's kind of emboldened by this idea that we have something similar to the Iron Dome.
Yeah.
The reality is that America's pretty good at shooting down short-range and medium-range missiles. But nuclear war, strategic nuclear weapons, are intercontinental ballistic missiles or submarine-launched ballistic missiles. And these are virtually impossible to shoot down, given the numbers.
Yeah.
I'll just quickly throw them at you. Our interceptor missile arsenal consists of 44 interceptors. 44.
Yeah.
When you consider that Russia has 1,640 nuclear warheads on ready-for-launch status, that math does not work out very well.
Even if all of our interceptors hit their targets, it's still not enough. I think a lot of people, you know, when the Iron Curtain fell, when the Soviet Union collapsed, a lot of people thought, well, that's kind of the end of this nuclear standoff between our two superpowers. Obviously, fast forward to today, Russia is not a friend. You've also got North Korea and Iran in the conversation. Is this kind of the ultimate catch-22? I mean, the idea of nuclear disarmament really isn't possible in today's world, given the threats that we are dealing with. But the more nuclear weapons we have, the more likely the unthinkable is to happen.
I would say that disarmament is possible, and I will perhaps it is wise to leave your listeners with a tiny ray of hope so that they don't just, you know, feel terribly depressed all day long, shall
right,
I?
Right.
It comes from a story involving President Reagan. So of all people, you know, President Reagan was a nuclear hawk. He believed in nuclear weapons. He thought more weapons made us more safe. But he, in 1983, watched a TV movie called The Day After.
I remember.
Which depicted nuclear war between, yes.
Remember it well.
And he became greatly depressed. He wrote that in his White House journal. He famously, that is the moment that is now called the Reagan reversal. And he decided that he was going to reach out to his enemy nation, Russia. He reached out to Gorbachev. They began having a dialogue. As a result, we had the Reykjavik summit. And the world went from 70,000 nuclear weapons to 12,500 that we have today. That is disarmament. That is a movement in the right direction. That is possible.
Again, the book is called Nuclear War. It's a very straightforward title. New York Times bestselling author and Pulitzer finalist Annie Jacobson is the author. Do you have a website in conjunction with the book?
You know, my books are available at bookstores everywhere, and okay. I also have Annie Jacobson as a website.
Definitely worth a read, an eye-opener to be sure. Annie Jacobson, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It is the story that just won't go away, no matter how much the White House would like it to. After his dismal and frankly disturbing performance at last month's debate, the calls for President Joe Biden to step aside and not seek a second term continue to grow louder. A lackluster TV interview didn't do much to assuage the concerns that he is just not fit for four more years as commander-in-chief. That was a few days after the debate. And then today, he will have a solo news conference at the NATO summit in Washington, D.C. Everybody will be watching that very closely. And if he flubs it, I mean, if it is as much a disaster as the debate was a couple of weeks ago, then the president may not have much of a choice but to figure out some sort of exit strategy, which would really throw the November election into complete disarray. But setting all of that aside, it is well known that as we age, our bodies and our minds begin to slow down. And this whole incident, this whole past couple, 3 weeks, has raised the questions about maintaining cognitive function as we age. It's certainly not something that is unique to Joe Biden. We all have to face the fact that this is going to be most likely an issue as we get older. But our next guest says it is possible to fight back against cognitive decline. Dr. Stephen Masley is author of the book, The Better Brain Solution, Build as a Step-by-Step Guide to Enhancing Cognitive Function and Fighting or Even Reversing Memory Loss. Not long ago, we talked to him about the book. It is a four-prong approach you lay out in the book. What are those four areas you say we must focus on?
Well, the key things that will help us improve our current memory and prevent memory loss are the right foods, the right nutrients, activity, and stress management. And when you put them together, they even work better than if you just do one at a time.
Now, not to sound skeptical, but that sounds remarkably simple, maybe too simple.
Well, in my clinic, we assess how people age, and we actually measure your brain processing speed and your memory on all of our patients. And we also look at your food intake, your nutrient intake, your stress management, your fitness, and your toxin exposure. And we've realized that in people who make the right choices, they have better brain function, and they have less memory decline. We did randomized clinical trials. We've actually published our results, and we've showed that the average patient following our program improves their brain processing speed by 25%. Pretty remarkable. And I think there's lots of other very recent data out there supporting that it really is true that you can improve your brain and you can prevent memory loss, and lifestyle is the most effective way to do that.
Couple of things real quickly. In the subtitle of the book, you talk about, first of all, it doesn't really matter what age you are right now, you can still find benefits out of this.
That's true. Whether you're 30s, 40s, you can still improve your brain processing speed, your ability to focus. True for 70, we saw the same thing for 70 and 80-year-olds. Everyone has the potential to improve their brain function and prevent memory loss. I think as we get older, it's more important to us, but it's never too early to start, and it's never too late. Even 80-year-olds can improve their brain function and even increase the size of their brain, both at the same time.
So kind of lay this out for us in a nutshell. Obviously, we can't get into the kind of detail that you find in the book, but give us an abbreviated overview of this.
Well, the simple approach is that we're going to focus on, number one, is adding the right foods and avoiding the wrong ones. As I said, sugar is the number one cause, so I want you to avoid sugar, refined carbs, flour, because flour and sugar act the same way. And there's 12 foods that you can add. This is the easiest part, 12 new foods to add: green leafy vegetables, blueberries and berries, dark chocolate, spices and herbs, nuts, and olive oil. There are specific foods you can add that will clearly improve your brain function and help prevent memory loss.
And again, those are going to bring the correct nutrients into play.
Well, they're nutrients, in the sense that we need like folates and B12 and vitamin D and magnesium, but it's hard, challenging to get all of those. So in addition to food, depending on the foods you eat, it is set up in the Better Brain Solution to make sure you're meeting your top five key nutrient needs, too. So the nutrients, the foods, they all go together. They work together to improve and protect our brain.
Exercise, as you mentioned, is one of the other components of this. When we say exercise, are we talking about physical activity with our bodies or mental-type exercises? Because, again, this is one of those things that in recent years has been very trendy to exercise our brain. Is that what you're talking about, or is this more broad?
Well, I'm really glad you ask it that way, because actually it's both. So they're both essential. You know, your brain is kind of like a muscle. If you don't use it, it'll shrink.
Right.
So, one, we do need mental challenge and exercises, and they do help, and they do work, and they will make a difference. But we also need physical activity. From the data we've published from our clinic, some of the strongest predictors of improving brain processing speed relate to how fit you are. So aerobic fitness and also strength training, your muscle mass, are independently associated with having a better brain. So I want people to exercise their brain with mental challenge, but also physically exercise their body, both aerobically and with strength training, because they're all important.
Stress management being the other pillar in this four-prong approach, and boy, stress management, I think we all would agree, is a lot easier said than done.
It is, but I mean, here's some really important points. If you're stressed all the time, and I think a lot of us are, mm-hmm. we probably live in a more stressful world than ever before, especially with social media nonstop 24/7. High levels of stress raise your cortisol, and cortisol breaks your tissues down and literally shrinks the memory center of your brain. The hippocampus will shrink. So it's very important that we spend time. But here's the good news. It doesn't take very much. 5 to 10 minutes of prayer time or meditation time mm-hmm. a day can lower cortisol and really help us manage our stress. So it's not like you got to spend hours or 20 minutes twice a day. Just short, but we have to be proactive and we have to plan it and do it. So a good night's sleep, a good workout to burn off tension, 5 to 10 minutes of meditation or prayer, that goes a long way to really helping physiologically manage stress.
Well, and as you mentioned, a workout being a part of that, I was going to say, would it be fair to say that you address those other three things, the food, the nutrients, the exercise, that will go a long way to reaching that fourth goal of reducing stress just in and of itself?
They will, but I think there's really added benefit to telling 5 or 10 minutes of prayer time or meditation time. There's just a big added benefit to that. And here's the thing we've realized. You could do any one of these pillars and get a benefit, but when you add them all together, you get like double the benefit. And national studies, like the one done in Finland recently, showed that when you put these steps together, you can improve brain function and prevent memory loss, and it's really powerful.
When we say improving and avoiding memory loss, and again, from the subtitle of the book, sharpening cognitive functioning function and avoiding memory loss, when we say memory loss, there are all sorts of levels of that. I mean, again, for some of us, it's just walking into a room and forgetting why we walked into that room, or where did I lay my keys down? I can't remember. And then in its more extreme form, we're talking about dementia and Alzheimer's. When we're talking about avoiding memory loss in this book, are you talking about addressing issues as serious as dementia and Alzheimer's?
That's a good point, and absolutely. I mean, so yes, the average person can improve their brain function, decrease their brain fog, and feel better. But just if we could get rid of the blood sugar control issues, insulin resistance in America today, we would probably eliminate much of heart disease, but we would also get rid of probably 60% of Alzheimer's dementia, the serious form. So this is a major serious disease. It's the number one cause of health care expenses today. It's a big deal. And it's pretty amazing that the pillars in this program really could decrease dementia by up to 60%. And I think there's very strong published data to support that claim.
Again, as we were going to mention, this is based on more than a decade of clinical research. It is the Better Brain Solution, How to Start Now at Any Age to Reverse and Prevent Insulin Resistance of the Brain, Sharpen Cognitive Function, and Avoid Memory Loss. Dr. Stephen Masley is the author. And do you have a website in conjunction with the book we can guide folks
to? I do. If they go to drmasley.com, DRMASLEY, there's a website and from free information. And as a gift, I have a free gift for them. They can get my Better Brain Shopping Guide that shows them the 12 foods to add, the 12 foods to avoid, and improve their brain function starting today.
Again, Dr. Stephen Masley, author of The Better Brain Solution, billed as a step-by-step guide to enhancing cognitive function and fighting and even reversing memory loss. Very timely, given that topic has been so much on everyone's mind, no pun intended, of late, with the president's struggles. We've got a link up for more information at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Georgia couple discovered that they were going viral and becoming something of internet celebrities, going viral for a video that had been circulating, making the rounds, and they were not happy about it. You know, some people really thrive, would love to become viral celebrities, but not everyone is into that. And this couple was so upset that they had become a bit of an internet sensation, and this video was circulating. They actually called police to report that a video of them apparently performing a lewd act with a margarita had been making rounds on social media. Performing a lewd act with a margarita. Not sure what that would be. Not sure that I want to know what that would be. But anyway, the couple not happy that this video had been circulating online, showing them performing a lewd act with a margarita. And so they called the cops. But instead of taking action against whoever was spreading the footage online, the police arrested the couple instead. It says here, the video in question appears to show Joe Boyette pouring a margarita down a woman's pants inside of a local Mexican restaurant. The restaurant has issued a statement, quote, "We want to make it clear that such behavior is completely unacceptable and does not reflect our values or mission to provide a family-friendly dining experience." The couple actually got arrested. Lewd act. The margarita. All right. So it did not go the way they expected it to go when they called the cops. Police had to come to the rescue after someone left their boa constrictor in the backseat of a rideshare vehicle in Minneapolis the other day. Yikes! Yikes! If you have ever thought of becoming a rideshare driver, make a few bucks on the side, all of that, this is definitely one of the downsides. Cops were called after the driver found a large snake, turned out to be a boa constrictor, in their car that was left behind by a passenger. A video posted to the police department's Facebook page shows an officer holding the slithery suspect that is believed to have been someone's pet. But, I don't know, you're a pet owner who leaves your pet behind. Are you really a good pet owner? I mean, the owner could not be reached at this point. They have not made contact with the owner. Officers said that no drivers, passengers, or snakes were harmed during the incident. But that would be enough to say, no, don't think that I would want to be a rideshare driver. No, thanks. Speaking of snakes, a man is facing charges in China after authorities caught him trying to smuggle more than 100 live snakes into the country in his pants. Customs officials said on Tuesday that they caught the man trying to cross into mainland China from Hong Kong. He reportedly had 6 canvas bags strapped to his legs filled with live snakes of various varieties. Is that a snake in your pants? Or you just got it? No, I do. So, okay. Live snakes in his pants. No, thank you. A couple of other items here from the broken news this morning. Police in the state of Oregon say they have recovered more than $200,000 worth of stolen Lego sets and busted open a massive theft ring. Massive Lego theft ring. Investigators this week said the Brick Builders store in Eugene, Oregon, was knowingly buying stolen Lego sets from thieves who were only paid a fraction of the actual value of the merchandise. Police say the Lego sets were stolen from other retailers like Target, Walmart, and then resold to the Brick Builders store for pennies on the dollar. More than 4,100 sets were seized in a raid earlier this month. Police in Eugene, Oregon, they are on top of that Lego ring. I know, initially you think, man, don't they have anything better to do? But that's pretty significant. I mean, you know how much those things cost? 4,100 sets, that's got to be like $1 or $2 million worth of merchandise there, I think. This story, let's see here, out of Taiwan from the International File. A man spent about 19 hours at sea in a rainbow floating ring after falling asleep while relaxing at the beach. This is like everybody's worst nightmare at the beach, right? 58-year-old man fell asleep while relaxing, floating in the ocean in his rainbow floaty, and drifted out to sea, spent 19 hours before being rescued by a fishing boat off the coast of Taiwan. Footage shows the crew of the Wanli Princess tossing the man a buoy and pulling him onto the boat. While the man was weak and a little dehydrated, he was otherwise in good health. According to the man, he had a few drinks after a long day of work, fell asleep in his floaty around 6 p.m. on July 6th, woke up hours later in pitch darkness, and drifted aimlessly until being rescued the next day. Wow. Oh, thank goodness that is a happy ending there, but that could have been very bad. And how about this story out of, where is this? I'm not really sure. The dateline on this, Connecticut is all I know. Somewhere in Connecticut, man who bought, let's try that again. A man who brought his $97,000 Chevy Camaro ZL1E Hendrick Edition to his local dealership for routine servicing is now suing the dealership after employees allegedly totaled the car during a joyride. $97,000 limited edition Camaro ZL1E. He took it to the dealership. They were just supposed to do some routine maintenance. And instead, service advisor Matthew Sebastian is accused of taking the 6.1-liter supercharged V8 down I-95 with another employee riding shotgun. According to the lawsuit, Mr. Sebastian was going almost 90 miles an hour when he lost control and crashed into a guardrail. The car was totaled. $97,000 car, someone else's car, they were joyriding in, completely totaled. It had just 989 miles on the odometer. When he dropped off his Camaro, owner Kenny Habul left explicit instructions that the vehicle was not to leave the lot. It did. And you knew that this was coming. I mean, you knew that this was what was going to happen. The service advisor takes it for a joyride, crashes it into the guardrail, and totals it. You can just see the story coming. Wow. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
We tell the stories of our men and women in the military and first responders each Sunday morning on WFIN. Hi, this is Ben Bueller Garcia, your host for American Warrior Radio. Our mission is to educate and inform the public not only about those who serve, but those who support them. We also share issues of importance to veterans and their families. Join us for American Warrior Radio, Sunday mornings at 6 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Maybe one of the reasons why we hate doing household chores so much is because we are being judged for the way we do them. In a new survey, one-third of us say that we have been told by others that we incorrectly fold our laundry. One-third of us have been told, you're doing that wrong. 28% say they have been told that they sweep or mop incorrectly. And 26% have been accused of not knowing how to properly wash our laundry. Maybe mom and dad are to blame. The study found that nearly 70%, right around 70% of us, say it was our mom and dad, mom and or dad, that taught us how to do all of these things and that we are now being judged for doing wrong. And it's interesting, even though mom and dad are the ones that taught us, 40% of those in the survey have say they have witnessed their own parents also cleaning the wrong way. So we're even judging our parents who supposedly taught us everything we are supposed to know about these things. You're doing it the wrong way. 47% in the survey actually say that they have tried to correct their own parents and the way they do these menial household chores. 26% actually say that they were never taught how to mow the lawn. 25% say they were never told how to do yard work at all. gardening, that kind of thing. 24% say how to properly load the dishwasher was a skill they did not pick up in childhood. Despite all of this, 17% of people claim to be near sterile in their households, meaning that they keep everything clean all the time. 60% in the survey said that they were pretty clean at home, but accepting of a little mess here and there. And 16% admit that they don't pay attention to how clean something is as long as it's organized and tidy. That's the most important thing for 16%. And finally, from the survey, 76% of parents say they plan on teaching their kids everything about cleaning that they were never taught. Which is great, but just keep in mind, at least if you believe the results of the survey, that doesn't mean that your kids won't judge you sometime later on down the road. Well, this week we learned that Joe Bonsall, the tenor vocalist of the legendary Oak Ridge Boys, had passed away after a long battle with ALS at the age of 76. Hard to believe that the lineup of that group has remained relatively unchanged for a half century. Joe Bonsall, in fact, was still touring as recently as last year when they made a stop at Tiffin's Ritz Theater. And ahead of that show, we spoke with fellow 50-year Oak Ridge Boys member Richard Sturban about their incredible careers in music and what incredible accolades they have had over those 50-plus years. 5 Grammys, 2 ACM Awards, 4 CMA Awards, 8 Dove Awards, induction into the Country Music Hall of Fame, the Gospel Music Hall of Fame, the Grand Ole Opry. From February of 2023, it is today's Throwback Thursday. 50 years in any business is impressive, but in the music business especially, it is practically unheard of. What is the secret?
Well, I think there are many reasons. I think first and foremost is the fact that we love doing what we do. You know, we look forward every night, even after 50 years, we still look forward to getting on stage, taking our music live to our fans and to our audiences, because it is what we love doing. I joined the Oak Ridge Boys in 1972, believe it or not, and we do not want it to end. We want it to continue for as long as possible. We love the creative process of recording new music. That keeps us going. Mm-hmm. You know, we have new music out, and we have plans to make a new album this year again. So we're looking forward to that.
You mentioned you joined 1972. What I did not realize was that when you joined up with the group, you had a pretty good gig going at the time. You were a member of Elvis Presley's backing group.
You know, you're right. It was a pretty good gig. No question. For about 2 years before I joined the Oak Ridge Boys, I sang in a group called J.D. Sumner mm-hmm. and the Stamps Quartet. And you know, I happened to be in the right place at the right time, because we got a phone call from Elvis. He was looking to hire a new backup group, and he hired J.D. and the Stamps. And here I was, a young guy in my 20s. I found myself on stage with the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty mind-boggling, you know.
Well, I was wondering, was there some hesitancy, some apprehension in signing on to this Oak Ridge Boys deal? I mean, that's a pretty good gig to walk away from.
Well, you know, that's an interesting story. You know, here I was singing with the biggest star in the world, and one day I got a phone call. And it was William Lee Golden of the Oak Ridge Boys.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy in our group, as you probably know, with the long beard.
Right.
But back then, he did not have that long beard. You know, he was Mr. GQ back then. But he called me, and he said that the bass singer in the Oak Ridge Boys was leaving the group, and the Oak Ridge Boys wanted to know if I would be interested in taking the job. I really loved the music that they were making, and I really believed that the group had a great deal of potential, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So I made a decision. We've been so blessed. We've had such a great career. So when I look back on that decision I made way back in 1972, I think I made a pretty good decision.
I was going to say, it's worked out pretty well. We mentioned all of the honors.
I think it did, yeah.
We mentioned all of the honors, the accolades that the group has earned over the years. I don't know, it may not be necessarily a fair question, but what do you look at as your greatest honor?
You know, I would have to say without an exception, you know, being inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, if you sing country songs for a living, there's no higher honor. And it's so difficult to find just the right words to describe how special it is.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the, when you go into the rotunda of the Country Music Hall of Fame here in Nashville, and you look at, you know, you look at the wall, you know, the faces in bronze on the wall, you know, you see Elvis, you see mm-hmm. Johnny Cash,
yeah.
you know, you see Dolly Parton, you know, to be a part of that family is so mind-boggling. Like I say, it's difficult for words.
Pretty good company. Your biggest chart success, of course, came during kind of the urban cowboy era of the 1980s. But for those who only know those hits like American Maid and Bobby Sue and, of course, Elvira, you may not realize that the Oak Ridge Boys have their roots, as you were mentioning, in Southern Gospel. And you kind of come full circle on that. It's where you started and much of what you do today.
You know, one of the reasons the Oak Ridge Boys are still doing what we do is because we love the creative process, creating new music. That's something that keeps us going, you know. And we are now being produced by Dave Cobb. Now, I don't know if that name rings a bell to anyone, but Dave Cobb is really one of the hottest guys here in Nashville right now. And he produced a new project on us here just a few years ago. We actually recorded the project during the pandemic. And I all the studios were closed down. Nashville was completely closed down, like everywhere else in this country.
Yeah.
But Dave Cobb called us up, and he said, "Fellas, you know, we can now record. You know, we just have to abide by the protocols, and which we were able to do." But he told us, he says, "What I want to do, he says, I want to capture the feeling of four guys just gathering on a front porch and just singing in a very informal way, you know, with very little structure to it." And Dave Cobb is a master at capturing feelings like that. And we were able to find some great songs. We found some old, getting back to your original question, we found some old gospel songs that I think people will recognize that they were at their labor to sing along with. We also found some great old country songs that people will recognize. But then also some brand new country songs.
That's awesome.
This project as well. But I think the most important thing is all of these songs on this project are very inspirational. They're songs that give people hope that are going through difficult times.
It must be nice to be at that point now where, I mean, you hear a lot of artists who've been doing this for a long time. They say that sometimes what really kind of burns you out is having to constantly feed the hit-making machine. And you are to the point where you can kind of do these projects that you want to do and do them on your own terms. And I would imagine that's one of the things that allows you to keep going the way that you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. We do not, when we go into the studio, we do not worry about what country radio is thinking, you know, because we don't have to.
We just
want to go in. We go into the studio. We want to record good music. We want to record stuff that we enjoy recording, you know. And a great example is on this last album that I was telling you about. I remember walking into the studio one morning. And I say morning, it was noon. You know, some of us don't do mornings very well. but we walked into the studio. We had just kind of gathered there. You know, we had no idea what we were going to record first, and just talking. You know, and just out of the clear blue, Dave said, "Fellas, if you guys were on the bus getting ready for a show, and you were warming up and harmonizing, what would you sing?" Immediately, Dwayne Allen, our lead singer, he started singing an old spiritual called Swing Down Sweet Chariot. We had never recorded the song, but we all knew the song, and we immediately jumped in and started harmonizing with him. And Dave said, that's it. He said, "Get to the microphone right now."
That's awesome.
You know, we had just walked through the door at the studio. We had no idea what we were going to do. And in probably less than an hour, it was a done deal, you know.
Yeah. Again, Richard Sturban with us this morning. Richard, thanks very much for taking some time. Certainly best of luck in the for however much longer you want to do this.
Well, let me speak for all the Oak Ridge Boys. And I can tell you, we do not plan to retire anytime soon. You know, as long as the good Lord above keeps allowing the Four Oak Ridge boys to have good health, we're going to keep doing this.
From February of last year, our conversation with Richard Sturman of the Oak Ridge Boys, the longtime tenor of the group, Joe Bonsall, passing away earlier this week. It is today's Throwback Thursday. And with that, we put the wraps on another edition of the podcast. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program today. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow to finish up the week.